following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You guys are listening to the True Wealth radio show. And today I'm your host, Matt Dixon, and with me in studio,
Justin Bruggeman.
Justin, thank you for joining me today on this wonderful Tuesday that we've got. Coming out of Christmas, how are you feeling?
Feeling great, Matt.
Yeah.
It's over with.
You're like, all the presents have been unwrapped. Yep. Now I just got to find a place to put all of them.
That's right.
Yeah. Have you gone up into the attic yet to find some storage space for all the old stuff?
No, that's all probably this week.
Okay. All right.
Later this week.
There you go. Okay, Justin, today we are talking about everything in the world of finances, but we're honing in on a certain area.
Yes.
Any idea what we're going to talk about today?
Oh, I do now because I read it.
There you go.
The alligator economy.
Yeah, so you want to know how I kind of stumbled upon this today?
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
I was taking in all the stock news, what's going on in the markets, and there was this like headline article, what you need to know about the current alligator economy. And I'm like, what in the heck is that? And it got me. So I watched like a 5-minute video on some, you know, top analysts that were talking about where they see things going in 2026. And this was a phrase that one of the ladies on the show used, and it kind of caught my attention. I'm like, we need to talk about this. This is a potential, you know, radio show idea for today, and exploring not just what it means to the stock market, but what it might mean to investors if we are really in what we call an alligator economy. So, Justin, do you care to take a stab at explaining this now that we've kind of talked about it a little bit?
Yeah. And so, well, I guess by the alligator, we're talking about the shape of the alligator's mouth.
Yes.
That's why with
thanks
you know,
for clarifying
an open,
that.
An open mouth.
Yep, an open-mouthed alligator.
Right.
How is the economy kind of like that?
Yeah, so it's, well,
or maybe how is the economy today kind of like that?
Yeah, so it's the economy splitting. So,
yep.
You know, one jaw going up, one jaw going down.
Mm-hmm.
And the top jaw would be consistent of like high-income households, asset owners, stable jobs, and market exposure.
Yep.
Which, and I think this kind of all tracks back to what the inflationary environment over the last couple of years, even kind of since COVID,
right,
for that matter.
So the top jaw is kind of representing people that are doing fine. Things are kind of maybe more on easy street when it comes to the finances.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bottom jaw, I'm guessing, is just like the contrary of that, where it's people that are more like that are renting or struggling with debt.
Right.
And they're very sensitive to price movements, which is what you just said, right? Like inflation hit, prices changed, and then some people were like really harmed by that.
And rents going up. Yeah, you're right. The debt-dependent spending, that one's great.
Yeah.
And it's just really kind of the split, which is, this kind of leaves out the middle class, I guess, when you kind of look at this.
Well, and I think that is a good point. If we're saying the middle class is kind of being
lowered,
left. Yeah.
Upper middle class, I guess.
Well, I think a lot of people have been saying the middle class has been eroding, right? Like we keep hearing like the middle class is disappearing and we're getting more of like the upper class and the lower class and there's not as much in between. And so like I imagine like this alligator mouth just opening wider and that middle class that kind of could have gone either way are falling to either
crawls,
one side or the other. Yeah.
Either crawls up or goes tumbling back.
Yeah. And so today's show I think is really about like not saying you're right or you're wrong or, you know, you're doing bad or you're doing good. It's not really that. It's just saying like, you know, like what area are you kind of falling into here and working through some of the why behind it. And then how do we combat the fact that things seem a little different than normal?
Yeah. And the reasoning by it. And I mean, there's just other aspects when it's different if your income is rising at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel the struggle as much. But if, say, it's, and it's also explaining like what people are feeling right now.
Oh, that's the big part. Yeah.
Because you feel kind of like stressed. Your income's growing fast enough or you're cutting spending fast enough
mm-hmm.
to kind of stay where you're at.
Right.
And that's where I think it's funny with the alligator with the open jaw is, you know, you can start tumbling down to the bottom jaw
mm-hmm.
if things don't work out in your favor.
Yeah, I think there's this core idea behind the show that just some people feel like they're doing fine or maybe even thriving, and then other people feel like they're just kind of getting squeezed out.
Right.
And then both can kind of be true at the same time, right? And so things feel weird. Let me give you an example. So like right now, consumer sentiment, right? So like how does the consumer feel? Their sentiment right now is at multi-year lows.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's been some GDP growth, and that's coming out of the University of Michigan, right? And so they're saying, hey, like GDP is growing, but the consumer is feeling worse than they felt in a really, really long time.
Right.
So like that's kind of one of the questions I guess I'd, you know, kind of pose to the listener. It's like, well, do you feel like your financial life has been getting easier or has it been getting tighter than maybe it was 3 years ago? Because there was that big money print, right?
Yep.
And then prices had to adjust. And for some people, I think they kind of shrugged it off like, well, yeah, groceries went up, but that's not really harming me. It was just kind of annoying.
Right.
And then some people are like, oh, yeah, grocery prices went up and now we're eating differently because we literally can't afford to eat the way that we were before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're in kind of a weird time right now. And one of the terms that I heard was this term called vibe session. And so you got your typical recession, right? But right now, a lot of people are using this term vibe session.
Okay.
Do you have any idea kind of where that comes from?
I don't.
Yeah, it's this, I mean, you've heard the term vibe, right? Like there's a vibe. So it's how you're feeling. And so right now I think a lot of people feel like we're in a recession. They feel the vibe of a recession.
But the data is not backing it up.
But the data is not backing it up. Do you have any guesses or just theories onto why that might be?
No,
I have a hunch.
I mean, I think it's just the inflation. To me, it's the inflationary pressures that have just happened. And it also can depend on where you're at in your life cycle as well. Because, I mean, if you're a single income household of, you know, call it a family of four, and you have two children at home on one income, inflation going up by as much as it has the last couple of years, it can really tighten things.
Yeah. I mean, so we've got the inflationary piece, like you just mentioned. So things are costing more. But at the same time, on the same hand, we can look and say, well, maybe you have a lot more equity in your house than you did 3 years ago.
True.
Right? And so you look at it and you're like, well, home prices have gone up. And if I am a homeowner, technically, I feel like I have more money in my name if I were to sell, but it's not really liquid. And then you look at trying to buy another house, perhaps, and those prices are also elevated.
Yep.
So you might actually kind of feel structurally trapped, even if you're a homeowner that on paper might be worth $200,000 more than you were 2 or 3 years ago. Has your quality of life changed? You know? Maybe it hasn't. Maybe it's actually slightly gone down. And so this vibe session, it's like it feels like a recession, but on paper, their net worth might be higher than it's ever been. The stock market. Look at the stock market.
Absolutely.
Like, who's been pinched by the markets lately?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we've had a huge run-up in
a big extension
in the markets.
Yeah,
a big extension. And so you can't really feel it there, but you still perceive, you know, a lot of people still perceive this pain point of a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I think this term kind of comes from. And it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. So, yeah. I think why it matters, though, is because people's behaviors are kind of changing, right? And when behaviors change, that really affects, you know, how people spend, number one, and then how people invest. And I think that as we move into 2026, that shift could be even greater than it is right now.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people are kind of run out of money from the kind of COVID subsidy, you can call that, I guess.
Right.
Where savings rates kind of started to increase and you're kind of seeing those rates go down, credit card rates going up.
Yeah.
Not interest rates, I mean the amount of debt. You know, and then at the same time when interest rates were climbing too. So that debt just, you know, everything that's tailored to the market, like, you know, the Fed rate or the market rate, credit rate, increased. So we could have been paying 23%. You might be paying 29% on credit cards now.
Right. And so that eats away and erodes more of your spending and purchasing power.
It's reverse compound interest.
So here's something for you to think about. Ponder this for a moment. So here's an interesting statistic that I think really meshes well with this idea of a vibe session. Okay.
Okay.
10% right now of households. So, or I said that wrong. The top 10%. So top 10% of earning households are spending roughly like 45% of all the U.S. consumer spending.
Okay.
So the bottom half is about, I think, 25%.
Okay.
So then go back to the comment about GDP, right? GDP might be increasing, but if the top 10% of earners are doing 45% of the spending, that might
just spend a lot of the money.
Right? And so it's like, well, what if this whole GDP thing is kind of being propped up by the high earners continuing to spend while the bottom half of earners in the U.S., they're only making up 25% of the spending, so roughly a quarter of the GDP maybe. Even if that falls, as long as the top earners keep spending, the GDP can look good, the economy can look good, but really you might be in an actual recession.
Well, and it could even be too, is you're getting a lot more dual household incomes than even was 5 years ago.
Right, and those dual household incomes kind of prop it up a little bit. And it insulates those people a little bit more from what's really going on. But imagine, remember those jaws continuing to slightly widen. And the question then becomes, do those jaws stay open, right? And do they kind of get wider? And does that stress pull everyone down? Or do things kind of shrug off and we move on and it's just part of history? So what does the data say about that? And I actually want to leave our listeners on that cliffhanger. So here we are, you know, high earners, low earners, the gap kind of seems to be getting bigger. What does that mean for the market? What does that mean for your investments? We're going to keep you hanging. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. You guys are listening to True Wealth Radio Show on 93.9 FM and 1240 AM. We'll be right back.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, everyone. Thanks for sticking around through the break there. If you missed the first segment of the show, don't worry. You can always go to littlejohnfs.com and catch yourselves up, listen to the podcast, or some of our prior content. Justin, today we are talking about this alligator-style economy and how the wealth divide appears to be getting larger. And I think we're here to validate people in saying, maybe you're not crazy, right?
You're not alone.
No. And then we're going to answer that sneaky question of like, all right, so here's what the data's saying, you know, and then what do you kind of do about it? So Justin, talk to me a little bit about kind of what the data is saying. Do you believe it? is it maybe even kind of worse than what, you know, the data says? Where are you at on all this?
Well, it depends on the data.
Yeah.
I read a lot about the inflation numbers.
Okay.
And, you know, even when we go through groceries is always a big ticket item. I got teenagers at home, so it's real.
So you're landing in that boat of maybe you're feeling it harder than some people because, you know, some people, it's just one or two people at home.
Yeah.
I mean, and here you're supporting four and friends.
Yeah. Yeah, we cook for a family of 12.
Right.
So it says, like, since 2020, groceries have gone up between 20 and 25%. And I call BS.
Yeah, it's got to be higher than that. And yeah. See, that might be part of it, right? The data says one thing, 20 to 25%. I don't personally believe that. I believe it is higher than that, substantially higher than that. If the data isn't real, then maybe the recession data just hasn't shown up either because the numbers.
Right.
You get where I'm going with this.
And even the inflationary pressure is slowing, you know, statistically, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
But you're not necessarily seeing things fall price-wise because people were willing to pay it at the higher rate at the higher amount. And, you know, you notice different things. Certain restaurants' portion sizes have changed over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Fast food prices are crazy now.
You know, part of what I was listening to in that interview was they were analyzing McDonald's stock as an example. And they said McDonald's as a corporation has identified that there is a problem. Their food prices have continued to go up, and yet and the portion sizes kind of shrunk, right?
Yeah.
Like you just said. But the big thing they identified was people aren't going there as frequently because the prices are higher.
Right.
And they know that people are getting pinched. So what are they planning to do for 2026? They're planning to figure out ways to roll out food at lower costs to try and attract more people because they're sensing behind the scenes people, whether the economy is ripping or not, or whatever you want to believe about the economy, the perception from the consumer is, I'm out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're out of money, guess what? They're not spending at the same rates. And so McDonald's has to bring more people in and sell more food. So they're going to figure out how to do it at a cheaper price point, whether that means cutting portions even more, or instead of chicken, maybe they're serving more pork. I don't know what McDonald's is going to do.
I don't think I want to know what adjustments are going to happen.
It's like, okay, well, we're not serving chicken anymore. We're going to take one right out of the movie there with, was it Anchorman, where they started serving bat instead of chicken?
Something.
You know what I mean? Like, they're going to figure out something. So,
And another big one is debt is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Consumer debt, not even just the amount of money, the percentage of debt, the debt to income ratio, is continuing to climb.
I mean, the credit card balances have gone through the roof.
Yeah. We're exceeding $1.1 trillion in credit card debt, which those banks must be making a killing.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that was one of the things that these analysts were talking about. They were saying, you know, with interest rates coming down and, people have gotten into some debt loads that are, you know, because rates did go up for a moment and the consumer oddly kept showing up largely to buy, even with rates moving up. And so they're like, well, the banks, you know, are actually looking to be poised. Some of the banks are supposed to be poised pretty well. So that's not a recommendation to buy, sell, or this, that, or the other. But, I think you're right. Credit card balances are up.
And people aren't splurging as much, but they're financing normal life now.
Mm-hmm.
All these kind of pay-as-you-go things that have started. I think even on like Amazon or something, you can... pay over 6 months.
Yeah, and they give you 0% interest for a little bit.
Right.
To try and incentivize you to make that purchase.
Exactly.
Isn't that a sneaky one?
Yeah, they're always sneaky.
right? Because it's like, well, you know, I really want this $300 thing, and it could just be $40 a month.
For the next 3 years.
Yeah, why not? You know, just why not do it? And so there, I feel like these banks, these credit card companies, lending institutions have gotten really, really good at like setting these little traps for people that look like something that's good on paper. But then when you get into them, like you slowly start to sink. And so part of the show is like, yeah, you know, if you're highly leveraged up on debt, and that can be a tough thing because, you know, your margin for error and all of this is really slim if things start to go wrong. And then you start to feel like you're part of that lower jaw that just keeps sinking. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Another kind of big thing that, you know, we've seen is savings and income rates have changed. You know, COVID's put a lot of stimulus into the economy.
It did.
And gave people great cushions for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the cushion's now deteriorating.
Yeah.
Especially in lower income households, you know, you're seeing it depleted. Like it's just no longer there.
Yeah.
And then the higher income households, you're seeing saving more cash.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Almost like more of a nervousness and uncertainty just with how radically things have kind of changed over the last couple of years.
That's an interesting point. So even if the high income earner, you're saying, is a little nervous, how do they combat nervousness if they're good with their money?
They might
just save more and pocket more away.
Yep.
And what is that the opposite of? Spending,
mm-hmm.
right? And what do we need for like a strong economy and strong GDP?
People to spend money.
People to spend money. And so, interesting. So you're painting this picture of like a way that you could start to see things really kind of walk backwards almost.
Could.
You know, like not saying that it will, but how do you, you know, how do you see a change in the economy for the worse? It doesn't actually mean things need to get worse, like on paper. It can be an attitude adjustment.
Yeah.
Like a nationwide 100%. Attitude adjustment that then causes things to change. That's very, very interesting. Okay. I like where you're going with this, Justin. So debt, you mentioned, and inflation are kind of big drivers. You mentioned savings and income.
Yeah, the income part is kind of just, you know, if your income has increased, you know, consistently over the last couple of years, you're probably not feeling it as much. Mm-hmm. You may not be feeling the more money you're making.
Yeah.
It may be, you may make 20% more than you did 4 years ago, but you may not living the same even quality of life.
That
it might even be
a
less
a big
quality
one.
Of life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a big one. Even if you got a 20% raise over the last 4 years, it's like, okay, you got 5% each year and things might look like you're making a lot more money. But if groceries are up 25% and say your rent is up 40% or whatever, over that same period of time.
Or insurance costs are a big one.
Or insurance costs.
Energy.
Energy's been killing people. And so it doesn't really matter if you've been getting decent raises. You might actually be worse off, you know.
Well, you're probably not worse off, but.
Or, yeah, it might be
about. Your quality of life may be either flat since then.
Flat to neutral.
Or down even a little bit. I mean, depending on how you were structured.
Right. And so even though it looks like you're spending a lot more money, here's the thing. People might not actually be splurging on things. They're just financing their normal life.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that kind of leads me down this rabbit trail of thinking more about like the job market.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to me about jobs, because to me, like, the job reports have been looking bad, right? Like, that's what I've seen. From everything you'll read right now, it's, you know, I hear a lot of, oh, the job market still looks solid, this, that, and the other. But I think that there's maybe some cracks kind of forming underneath of that, because from all the charts I've looked at, I'm like, well, maybe the job market isn't is good. I think hiring's been slowing. I think less people are quitting their jobs. Remember, like, people there for a little bit when we were handing out stimulus money. They're like, oh, forget it. I'm quitting. I'll go figure it out.
Come back to work.
Right? And I think wage growth is cooling too.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of, I mean, look at these tech companies. They're laying off people left and right. Even some of the high income earners have seen some jobs disappear. So I don't know. I think that employment is kind of looking weird.
I think some of those layoffs could be due to remote work.
Oh, really?
I don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
But just, you know, now it's being more of a thing to be in person, in office, you know, than it was for a couple of years. And I don't know if productivity levels have changed. I don't know if it's been long enough for them to even do a ton of studies on it yet.
Mm-hmm.
On what the productivity change versus working remote versus working in office or in person is.
Yeah. Yeah. That is something interesting to think about.
Thanks. I get to research that for the next 3 hours.
And you,
now
you
I'm
know
just
what?
Going to be curious.
Yeah, I think you should. So how about this? How about we take a little bit of a break? Justin's
sure.
going to research this in real time. He's going to come back with some interesting statistics here for you. And then we're going to continue this conversation of, you know, let's look at spending behavior. So what are you going to do about this? You've got some options. And then we're going to dive even deeper into the investment side. So stick with us. We'll be right back. You guys are listening to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm Matt Dixon.
And Justin Bruggeman.
You guys are listening to 93.9 FM and 1240 AM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Justin, we're right in the middle of this, okay? There's four segments to this show. We've done two of them. This is the middle of the show. Recap to me a little bit about what we've talked about, or I can recap it to you, either one. And then we left these listeners off where you said you were going to research something. Did you happen to find an answer to that research?
In my defense, I did say the next few hours. But
I'm not the type of person that gives someone a few hours. I'm the type of person that gives someone a few minutes. Like, come on, snap, snap.
So what I found in the short amount of time is you are actually about 35% more likely to get laid off if you work remote.
Really?
Correct.
That's actually a pretty substantial increase.
They're not finding enough data for, you know, productivity measures, but they have, when people are severanced out,
yeah,
or voluntarily severanced out,
mm-hmm.
those count against the numbers too, even though people are voluntarily leaving.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what, but, you know, the big tech companies, those ones are real.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So let's kind of move into this idea I have about like where people are actually feeling this. Because like I want to know, like for the consumer, for the person who's an investor, like where are they kind of feeling this change, right? Where the gap might be growing a little bit. Where might you feel it if that gap is growing indeed?
I don't know if this is a great analogy, but I know of it for a fact.
Oh.
But I used to work at a liquor store.
Okay.
And when economic times get rough,
mm-hmm.
bottle count goes up, shelf goes down.
So people aren't buying the really expensive $120 bottles anymore. They're buying
more of the cheaper stuff.
Interesting. Now, I have a question for you. That makes sense, but... And maybe this is a hard one because you probably weren't following like the stock market. Do you remember?
No,
like,
it really wasn't.
Yeah. So
and
it's
I,
like
I've been meaning to go.
Like I wish I could pull from like the data, and maybe you probably could somewhere.
We
but
can.
It's like, what if things are still on paper doing really well? Like right now, no one's called. I mean, I haven't seen very many people saying we're actually in a recession, right?
No.
So like, it'd be interesting to look at bottle sales and say like. Are people actually gravitating towards, you know, the cheaper products right now, or are they not? Because, like, I know that it's not just alcohol where this happens. It's also, like, the beef versus the pork thing.
Right.
And so I know that, like, when people are kind of feeling the pinch a little bit more, at least they think they are, maybe they're not buying sirloin steaks. Maybe they're buying chicken.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they could.
So it'd be interesting to know. Maybe we'll look at that on our next break.
That ain't going to happen on a break.
You watch me do it. Give me 2 minutes. I can solve anything in 2 minutes.
I just need to go talk to Mike and I can get the numbers.
There you go.
Like,
go talk to the old boss. Yeah. But yeah, I think that it's not just, you know, exchange of cheaper items.
Yeah.
But I think it's also like you're buying fewer things when you're there. And I don't know.
The eating at home, cooking at home rate has gone way up.
Yeah.
Just because the price of going out.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen that change, and you can stretch dollars a lot longer that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fewer items per trip, which that's kind of a weird one to me because I feel like per trip is, if you make a bunch of little trip, I think it's more expensive than just one trip.
Yeah.
In my life, it is, mm-hmm. I guess. Maybe I'm not like everybody.
Yeah. I think one of the other things you can kind of start to use as a gauge too, maybe this is right, maybe it's not, but I would look at like the value stores, like the Dollar Generals and the dollar stores, Dollar Trees of the world or whatever, and just look at the foot traffic there, because a lot of people really are, I mean, I don't even know if frugal is the right word. They're just very cautious with how they spend. Yeah. And if they feel like things are, you know, a little sideways or whatever, they're going to go and they're going to look for a cheaper alternative.
So what over the last couple of years, I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I love being put on the spot.
Have you adjusted?
TV subscriptions. That's the biggest one. Now I just bum off of you.
that's right.
You're like, hey, you still have my login.
As I preach, just pay attention to what you're paying for. I forget I'm paying for that.
Yeah, but no, that's one of the, I mean, I've just looked at like all the different ways that you can kind of try and trim back, but still live kind of the same type of lifestyle roughly.
Right.
And so that is one, I think, where, you know, we've made some adjustments is just like, I like to organize my spending by category.
Okay.
And then from category, I like to drill down into subcategory. So I was actually just doing this yesterday. And so for us, like, one of the biggest areas that we spend is, like, it's titled shopping, right? On my Chase app, it's shopping.
Right.
But that just throws so many things in there. It throws Costco in there. It throws Amazon in there. And it's like,
all the shopping places?
Well, like, Costco's, for us, is probably 80% food.
Okay.
Maybe not 80, maybe 60. 60% of it's food. But like some of it's like cat food, not human food. So
Pet,
like it doesn't do a perfect job of breaking that down. But then that's why I said I look into the subcategories. And then I will look and say, what are we spending at Amazon each month on average over
right.
the last 12 months versus what are we spending at Costco on average over the last 12 months? And one of the ways that we started to save a lot, honestly, was by not going to Costco.
Yeah.
No, like, I'm serious. That was the hack, because here's the thing that I realized. Yes, there are great deals at Costco. I have nothing against Costco. Love Costco. However, when it came to our personal spending, it's like, you know, we'd go in there and you might get a thing of avocados, right? Because they look great. And guess what? They're avocados for whatever reason. I don't know if you've noticed this, but Costco's avocados tend to always be like way better than any of the other
stores.
You cut them open, they're great, right? But
their
problem
is top notch.
Right. But here's the problem. We as a family of three cannot eat through that many.
Two and a half.
Yeah. Like we're not going to eat through an entire. Yeah. 2.5. Yeah. That's actually a more accurate statement. But the 2.5 of us can't really or won't really eat through that many avocados. So what's it produce? Either waste or an overabundance of things. Now, paper towels, that's a different thing. We still go there and get our paper towels. But what I showed my wife is, hey, this is our number one expense. Costco's the biggest expense. So how about we only go to Costco like once a month? And by doing that, we still get the paper towels, we still get the cat food, we still get all of those things, but by limiting the trips to once a month, save a ton of money. Because you don't buy the shirt that is cool because you just happen to walk past it, and you don't buy the new plate set because, oh, I would really like the matching plates. And you don't buy all of the little tricky things that want to grab your attention when you walk past them.
All I heard you say was, don't bring my wife.
Don't bring your wife to Costco. There you go. It's like,
sorry, Cheyenne.
Yeah. We got suckered. We went two or three times because it was the holiday season. And guess what my wife bought? She bought the seasonal doormats.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and it's
like, you
gotta
have those, bud.
I'm like, great, we bought a doormat for $10. It's gonna last all of 30 days.
Good thing it's just in the shopping category.
You know me, Justin. If you know anything, you know that I didn't say anything. I bit my tongue. We got the seasonal doormat, but you asked the question, so there's your answer. That's how I deal with things, is okay. I break it down into categories. So, what about you?
Oh, probably a big one for us is stop going out to eat and after our kids' sporting events.
Oh, man.
Even, like, fast food and stuff. It's because, I mean, during basketball season, it's like 30 games in a month, it feels like.
Well, didn't we just kind of talk about the whole problem with McDonald's, for example? I don't think it's just McDonald's, right? Like, a cheeseburger, fries, and a soda at McDonald's. I mean, granted, I haven't been to McDonald's for that in a long time, but you'd probably know. What's the average, like, double cheeseburger, or what do they call, McDonald's calls their burger the, you know, Whopper. You know,
no,
Whopper's,
Big
the Big Mac, yeah.
I think they're
burger
like 13
King's
bucks, something like that.
Yeah, that's 13, what I was going to say, 13 bucks.
You go family of four, it's 60 bucks.
Right, and then you go to Taco Bell and?
Yeah.
It's probably similar.
Yeah.
So,
It's legit. We don't eat out very often no more. We take lots of snacks.
See that? Remember how we were talking about food? They're claiming food only went up 20% to 30% or whatever.
Yeah.
I can remember back when Domino's, like, do you remember getting like those $5.99 pizzas back in the day?
Yeah, they're only $6.99 now.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm slow clapping for Domino's then.
Good job, Domino's.
Yeah, but I'm like, I haven't been there in a long time, but I guess normal pizza's like $10.
I mean, dollar menus I don't think exist anymore. Those were the best.
Oh, yeah, when the McChicken was $1.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and then it went to $1.50. What percent increase is that?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. So, hey, Justin, I'm looking at the clock. We're running right on time for our last break. So let's do this. Let's get back to this in a minute, and then we're going to take a look at why the market can still look strong, even if the economy feels otherwise. So stick with us. You guys are listening to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm Matt Dixon.
And Justin Bruggeman.
You guys are listening to 93.9 FM and 1240 AM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Justin, is this the best Tuesday that you've had all month?
Sure.
Cool. All right. Well, you can see that Justin is
going
super
through
pumped.
The other ones before him.
Justin is pumped up. He's excited because he's got lots of information to throw at you listeners.
Oh, do I?
Yeah, you do. I can see it. You're just itching in your seat. You can barely even stay seated right now because you're going to talk to me a little bit about why the market can kind of look strong even if the economy behind the scenes could be a little shaky. Talk to me about it. What are you thinking?
Well, one, markets are forward-looking,
not always in the exact moment of where they are today. Yeah. That's something I don't think very many people actually know, because think about it like this. If I'm a billion-dollar hedge fund manager, right, I know what's happening right now. I can just look around and I can see it.
Right.
But I need to position my portfolio to align with what I think is going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months, right? Because in the next 3 to 6 months, if I know, if you knew for certain what was going to happen in the next 3 months, don't you think you'd know where to put your money? Mm-hmm. Right? Like play that out. If you knew that a massive bomb was going to get dropped on a continent, do you think that you would be necessarily investing in like the market, for example, as a whole? Or would you be pulling money to cash, right? Like you would probably be positioning more to cash. Like if you knew what was going to happen in the future, you would be making a move based on that. If you had known that silver was going to double in the last month or whatever, you would have positioned your money probably into silver.
All of it.
Right? So yeah, all of it. Now, so I say all of that to say, you have to look into the future, mm-hmm. make your best educated guess, and then invest towards that. And so, yeah, the market and the economy don't always just walk hand, you know, over hand, foot over foot, because right. things could be really crummy in the economy right now. But if you know that they're going to cut a bunch of stimulus checks and hand right. everyone $2,000 in a week, you're probably going to be like, well, here we go. So you, even if the market was bad at that time, you'd be looking at it and saying, well, I'm pretty long right now. So I think you're very much correct. The market and the economy are not necessarily in walking and talking together.
Markets don't care if the economy is bad today. They care if it's less bad than expected.
Yep.
Which expectations always change.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of fighting a moving target.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Which in the
sense.
Economy and the market are, you know, when you're looking at the economy, you're looking at jobs, wages, GDP, spending, business investments.
Right.
So that can change, you know, that isn't necessarily completely correlated to the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, the market can go down in great times.
Yeah.
And it can be going up in horrible times.
Right.
And that can all change best. I mean, the economy is your lived experiences.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other part of this is the market, this is going to sound wild when I say it, but bear with me for a second. The market doesn't really like tell the story.
Doesn't care?
No. The market doesn't really tell the story of the actual market.
Right.
Why? Because the bulk majority of the stock market's made up by very few companies.
Yeah, the cap weighting.
Yeah, so changes. Like when people are like, the S&P's way up, it's like, well, so you mean like Apple and NVIDIA and Microsoft and Amazon are way up? Okay, yep. But how are the other 400 and something companies
right.
doing? You know what I mean? So I think that the indexes can look strong, but a lot of the other ones can be getting beat up pretty bad. And so I actually think we're kind of experiencing that to a certain degree even mm-hmm. now, right? Like look at the last 12 months. Where were the gains? It was largely tech, right? And there was a lot of other sectors that were kind of like flat to not that great. And so, yeah, it really depends on where you're looking and what are you really measuring.
Right. And I think even what markets, you know, this is just an opinion, are kind of telling us even now is they're expecting a soft landing.
Mm-hmm.
Earnings yep. to survive, you know, this,
yeah,
you know, time of time, and that rates will drift lower and kind of keep things kind of propped up.
And the question is, like, has the stock market priced that in?
Right.
Right. Because here's the takeaway I kind of want to give to a listener, right? Just because you have a strong market, stocks are doing great, that doesn't mean that you should just feel like life is on easy street all of a sudden, right?
It does
because
help.
I mean, it helps, right? It helps today if you want to pull the money today. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, feel good about that. But what if the market drops 20%. Ask yourself, are you still feeling good
right
then, right? Because then it's a whole different thing potentially for you. So don't get kind of complacent in where you're at just because things are okay in the moment. But on the contrary to that, also, like, we talked about the whole concept of, you know, like, vibe session, right? Like, just because there might be a bad vibe doesn't mean that you need to panic either.
Right.
Right? Because that's one of the worst things that you can do is start making super rash decisions based on emotion. That typically doesn't play out real well for people.
Mm-hmm.
So avoid, I guess, the extremes in life. Try and breathe. Try and make calculated decisions. Don't just be like, well, it feels horrible, so I'm all out, or, you know, it feels great, I'm all in. Like, this is kind of why I think talking to a professional can help a lot of people, is a lot of people tend to be really emotional mm-hmm. with their decisions, right? And so that's why I think financial advisors still, you know, have merit and value, because we're not directly tied to it the same way that you are, right? And we've talked about that a lot on the show in the past. It's like, we can be a little bit more clinical, but oftentimes people are really emotional when it comes to money. So, Justin, what should someone do if they're like, you know what, I am that emotional person, or I don't really like to think about the money. I like to just, you know, go surfing or something, or golfing.
How many surfers do you know, Matt?
Not
you can give
many.
The office a call, 541-375-0898, or email at info@littlejohnfs.com.
Is our website awesome?
Yes.
Littlejohnfs.com. You guys heard it here. You heard it from us. We hope you have a great rest of 2025. We'll catch you in 2026. It's been a great day, great show.
Have a safe and happy new year.
There it is. Yes, yes. You guys are listening to KQEN on 93.9 FM and 1240 AM.